Welcome to Circuit Break from MacroFab, a weekly podcast show about all things engineering, DIY projects, manufacturing, industry news, and food device design derby roundup. We're your hosts, electrical engineers Parker Dillman
and Stephen Craig.
This is episode 427. So before we get to the roundup of the design derby, I want to talk about some podcast stats. We don't have a lot of stats, I guess, to share. This is the one I just wanted to, though, was 86% of y'all. And we're going to call y'all breakers now.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Well, you're the one who came up with it, Stephen.
Did I? I don't remember that.
Yeah, you were just like, I'm going to call people breakers now.
Oh, well, I like it.
That was a couple of episodes ago. Okay. You did the outro and you said, you called them breakers.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, our listeners are called breakers. I like it.
Yes. So 86% of breakers listen to the entire episode.
That's
every single second of it.
That's honestly kind of crazy because in some of the other stats I've seen in just podcast in general, the numbers are never that intense. Intense in terms of like how long people actually listen. 86% of y'all listen to the whole episode. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Because the average is 42%.
Yeah.
So y'all are dedicated. Thank you, breakers. We're going to start a email notification for the podcast when it comes out. There's going to be like a mailing list you can sign up for. It's not going to have any new information. It's just an email that goes out that says that lets you know that the podcast is live. Because we're switching from releasing on Tuesday mornings of the episode, we're switching back to Fridays. So Friday at noon, you can listen to our podcast.
Yeah, great way to start the weekend.
Yeah, great way to start the weekend. Start
listen
early.
To our podcast and then take a half day and go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Be a breaker.
Be a breaker. And then please review the podcast. We haven't had any reviews in a while. So if everyone that are breakers that are on our forums, forum.macfab.com, that talk every week about the podcast, take some time, go review the podcast, or just like click the star thing and just like type in a period.
Or just say like, good, I like, or something like
I
that.
Like. Well, I mean, they could also put, I hate listening to these people.
You could.
I can't. There are people that hate watch and hate listen things. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it seems like a waste of your time.
Time? Yeah. There's so much media and just stuff to do in modern society that, I don't know, just bogging yourself down with negativity doesn't sound like a productive use of time.
Well, okay, side tangent, but still connected to this. Whenever I'm going to look at reviews for almost anything, I first start by just gathering, like, what do the reviews generally look like? Is this a thing where it's like everything is 5 stars? It's got 30 bazillion 5 stars or whatnot. If that's the case, I typically don't care about the people who put 5 stars. It's like, great, everyone thinks that. I go to, like, who's saying the 1 stars? Like, what about those people thought 1 star was appropriate? This is especially true with, like, okay, you want to pick up a bicycle helmet on Amazon and you go and you find the one bicycle helmet that has 500,000 five-star reviews. Like, what was the person who got the bad one? What are they saying? You know, like, what are the outliers?
Got in a bike wreck, had brain damage now.
Well, ooh, yeah, right.
1 star.
So yeah, I don't know. Go review the podcast, please. It would really help us out. So thank you.
I can see the review now. 5 stars. Gave me brain damage. Recommend the Circuit Break podcast.
Did not like bicycle helmet. A plus plus. Right. Would listen again for 86%.
Yeah. All right. So the food device design derby, we ran a contest earlier this year. It wrapped up a couple weeks ago. We're finally getting to the episode where we can actually talk about wrapping it up because we had a couple guests and then we actually took a week off of recording, and that's when we posted the Batman episode, which was awesome. I love that episode.
I kind of want to do more like rando episodes like that, because where it was like a uni topic, but fun or unique and offshoot. I don't know. I had a lot of fun doing that one.
Yeah, I have one on the list, and it's the Back to the Future episode.
Ooh,
where we talk about like tech in the future and Back to the Future and like how much of it is real, like actually came true.
Like the little pizza they put in the microwave and they press one button and it expands and pops into a full-size large pizza.
Yes.
Love
and
it.
The hoverboard.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Mr. Fusion.
Well, we don't have that yet, unfortunately. Maybe we will by the time we talk about
it. We have Fusion Jr. right now.
Yeah, Fusion Jr. And so, yeah, if you have any other ideas of like singular topics like that, let us know at form.macfab.com. Gotta keep plugging it. So we had 5 entries to this contest. We had judges that internal at MacFab pick 3 of them, 3 of these projects, and they ranked. They basically each judge picked 3 and ranked them from 1, 2, and 3, and then like the first place got 3 points, the second place got 2 points, third place got 1 point, and then I just added up all the points from all the judges, and then that whoever had the most amount of points won. Is that a good way to explain it?
That's how it works.
Yeah. So the judges we had the entire engineering team judge projects. I think it was 5, ended up being 5 engineers actually took the time to do it. Most of it was the order review and test engineers. And then we had Aaron reviewed them. And she is like the facilities manager here at MacroFab. Chris Church, our co-founder and chief product officer, spent some time to review the entries. And then Kaylin Smith, who was on the podcast long time ago, she's a software developer here at MacroFab, and she reviewed and did the entries as well.
Very cool. Thanks to all the judges for taking the time to review these and give your thoughts on them.
Yeah. So third place the judges ended up picking is the pizza pouch, which is a like wearable device that you can slide a piece of pizza in and it will keep it nice and warm so you can eat it for later.
It's a singular slice pizza fanny pack with a heating element.
Yes. I just love how the I think it's also an IoT device too.
Oh, it actually full on connects and you can get like stats on your pizza.
Yeah, I think so. I think it does like Wi-Fi control so you can see like the temperature of your pizza as well.
Oh, wait, okay. So it uses an ESP8266. Oh, yes. And it's controllable from your mobile. That's cool.
Yeah, so you can probably adjust the temperature of your pizza.
What I really like about this project is, okay, the documentation that was put up on our forum is fairly comprehensive, but it's also creative at the same time, going all the way from conception of the idea with like a full-on hand-drawn, like, this is what I think it's going to look like on the body. And it was like something like this seems fairly simple in terms of like it could have just been like some lines in like a triangle to show the pizza. But no, they went through the whole exercise of making a drawing with like full color on it. I love it. It's fantastic. Well, this is spot on exactly what we were looking to have done with this whole contest.
Yeah, and they designed a custom PCB, manufactured it themselves, and did everything that way. I would say the only thing you could improve on this project, and I actually, when I saw the drawing, the first thing I thought of was it could be like a pizza bandolier. You can have multiple slices of pizza.
You could have the entire pizza just as different pockets. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can have different temperatures depending on the slice.
Oh. Okay, what would be cool, get this, not every topping on pizza likes to stay in like a warm state for a very long period of time, right? Like some toppings can get soggy or they get really kind of gross or gummy or something. It would be cool if there was an upgraded version of this that was higher power that when you were thinking about that slice, you could throw some more toppings in and like cook them real fast and then have them ready and more fresh. That would be cool. I mean, walking around with like a 200 watt heater on your chest might not be the best idea.
And a tool battery clipped into your waist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Also, thumbs up on the black PCB. I'm a sucker for a good looking black PCB.
Second place the judges picked was Jav Aqua. So Jav Aqua is kind of an interesting project. It's a way to refill an automatic coffee maker, but automatically.
Yeah, like a Keurig. You know, we have a Keurig at my house, and I think at best I can get 3 cups of coffee out of it before I have to refill the water tank. And so it's certainly a perception thing, but it feels like every time I need a cup of coffee, I have to fill it up. And I have thought of this exact project multiple times of like, hey, wouldn't it be awesome to create something that just autofills? And lo and behold, the Jav Aqua solves that or scratches that itch.
Yeah. And they built a standalone, like it has an enclosure, screen, firmware. And there was a unique way of how they were measuring the water so it wouldn't overflow. What was that?
Wasn't there? There's a water level sensor placed within the coffee maker water container.
Yes. Yeah, because I think he was mentioning, or they were mentioning, that some these kind of units exist, but some of them use like a float, like a toilet bowl float.
Yeah, yeah.
But that can get like stuck. So.
Right, right. Which, okay. So somewhat funny, I installed about a month ago, I installed an RO water system in my basement with a 15-gallon storage tank. And the solution was using a float valve such that once it tops itself off, it closes off the valve. But I've thought of this multiple times while installing this system. I was like, if this float valve just decided to not close, this water system would just keep producing and cranking out water all over the place. Jav Aqua is once again, funny enough, something I've thought of multiple times for other projects, but this one in particular is like, oh man, I would love something like this that is more controlled and prevents overflow situations, which is exactly what was one of the main features of this.
Yeah, and they even mentioned using a flow sensor as well. Mm-hmm. So what you can do is, sure, you have like a level sensor in your tank, but you also go, hey, you know, I probably shouldn't like pour out more water than I know my tank holds.
Right.
As like a double safety. Check yourself before you wet yourself.
One of the things when I was reading through this, one of the ideas that came to mind when I was looking through this project was, because it has a brain in it and it's intelligent enough, I would actually consider putting a timer in the firmware for this and timing how long does it take to fill an entire tank of water. And anytime this device goes to do a fill operation where it turns on the valves and allows water to flow, I would start a timer and restrict it to that maximum time that I had empirically found, such that if there was an issue, the absolute worst case overflow situation is you would dump one full tank. But in most situations, that would not be the case, obviously, because there's a sensor. But having that extra level of software protection, that even though it's a bad thing to get water all over the floor, the worst case would be one full tank worth.
Yeah, instead of it just all over and just keeps going.
Just nonstop, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then first place picked by our judges is the Bar Buddy. So this is a personal bartender. And what I like about this project is they actually use it every day and entertain their guests with it.
I'm sure it's certainly a talking point. And with a first place prize, it'll be an extra talking point now. But one of the things I thought was really cool about this project is that the person who designed it, first of all, they started years ago. In fact, they said, I started developing the Bar Buddy right before COVID when I thought it would be fun to have a personal bartending machine at home. So the cool thing about this project is not only you know, was it a first place win? But it's also a completion of a project that's been going on for a long time. So that gets big thumbs up from my side. But also the person who designed it was a mechanical engineer who admits that that electronics wasn't necessarily their cup of tea. The nice thing, or the really cool thing about it, is there's a lot of really good electronics work in here, including a lot of coding going on and like custom GUIs and you know, everything done on a Raspberry Pi. It's really freaking cool.
I do like they show off the iterations of the GUI.
Yeah.
And I love how the first iteration is totally what an engineer would make.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have written software that looks just like that.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the second iteration does actually... Yeah, it's so funny that the second iteration is a lot like what I've done as well. But I like it a lot. I wonder what... Did they mention what software they were using for the Python? Because it was Python.
Well, it's TK is the GUI.
Oh, is it Tkinter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. The first one definitely looks like Tkinter, but the second one, they somehow made Tkinter not look like Tkinter.
You know, a lot of times with all that GUI stuff, in my experience, you spend a ton of time just getting it to initially work. And then you get your actual code to function, and then you spend a ton more time after that getting it to look nice. That's usually like the progression of how GUIs end up, at least for me.
Yeah.
So the Bar Buddy has, what is it, 8 different pumps, and basically keeps a shopping list or a stock of what is available. And what's cool is you can program in whatever drink you want, but then you can add parameters to the drink where I like this drink, but I want it to be a little stiffer. You can apply that parameter and it will adjust how it makes the drink for you, which is pretty cool.
I would like a tequila sunrise plus plus.
Plus plus, extra plus. Actually, that would be cool, a next iteration. Not that you need to feature creep this, but if it did have voice commands where you could just say, hey, bar buddy, make me a tequila sunrise, and boom, it just comes out.
Could you imagine, like, Alexa, pour me a glass? And then it just goes, you've had enough. I'm cutting you off.
Give me your car keys.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, go check those out. We'll put all the links in the show notes. But we get to pick the Circuit Break favorite now.
Well, before we do that, congratulations to all the first, second, and third place winners. Thank you for entering and for all the hard work you put into it. These were not simplistic projects, and they probably took a lot of time, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So we have 2 more entries that we're going to cover. One was the Pocket Fire, which we talked about on a previous episode. That was our first entry, and that is like a cylindrical tube that is an air fryer. So you can cook, you can fry up snacks
on the go.
And the second one was, it's Hot Dog. It's a state-of-the-art device that solves the pressing issue in our society, hot dog detection. When I saw this one, I shared it with like everyone here at MacroFab. I'm like, this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen someone enter into one of our contests. And what it is it's a camera with AI, custom electronics, and it detects if an object is a hot dog or not. So that's my pick is for the Circuit Break favorite is the hot dog detector. It has a custom piece. So the reason why I'm picking that over the fryer is the hot dog actually has a custom PCB and is shown to work. Like the video is actually really well done for it. And I like how it's just called the Hot Dog Pi Shield V1 is the circuit for it.
Yep.
And it just says, it has a screen that says, that's a hot dog. Whereas the pocket fryer isn't shown to work. I would love to see a video of, that's actually the thing with all these projects, is there's always a video or demonstration of it actually functioning. Whereas the pocket fryer, unfortunately, just has a prototype that is said to work, but, you know, it's the internet. I can't trust anything. I can't even trust if AI knows if it's a hot dog or not.
So I am actually going to recuse myself from this, from the circuit break favorite pick. And the reason why is because one of these remaining two that's out there is somebody that I know. And so in a, out of an effort of not playing favorites, I'm going to recuse myself from this. So I will let Parker be the deciding vote in that.
Well, I'm voting for Hot Dog. So congratulations to Hot Dog, the AI hot dog detector.
I think that project, I lost it when I saw that video come in. Just because of how ridiculous the project is. So the person who made the hot dog project, I originally said, hey, we're doing a contest if you want to enter, and they thought about it for a while, and I just love that the end result is that this is what they came up with, just a device that detects if something is or is not a hot dog. And we made a joke, actually, after the project was submitted, we made the joke about would it be possible to find a way to get the hot dog project onto a satellite, onto a CubeSat, and send it up into space and have it flip around and view the Earth and confirm if the Earth is or is not a hot dog.
And if it's a sphere or flat.
No. No, we need the real pressing questions here. Is the Earth a hot dog or not? We still don't know until we send the hot dog bot into space.
You know, I mean, can we crowdfund that? How much does it cost to send a CubeSat?
I was looking it up, actually, just as out of a joke. The numbers are they vary wildly. I've seen some numbers as low as like $2,000, and other numbers as high as $50,000 to send a CubeSat into space. So I think, honestly, the probably the best way to get something into space is to find a college student that is part of a program where they send their thing up and say, hey, how can we tag along a hot dog bot on your CubeSat?
Because you could just pipe in the video feed from, like, a SpaceX launch.
Ooh, that's true.
And they can just always detect if there's a hot dog or not in that web stream.
Yeah. You know,
Elon, it shows Elon Musk in the stream and it says there's a hot dog right there.
the guy who designed it was telling me, Jesus, the guy who designed it was telling me about how they came across one of the ideas, and they were looking at some AI.
It's called YOLO V8.
Yeah. You say,
Version 8, by the way.
Basically, it takes an image and then it identifies a whole list of anything that it realizes in that image. And when they were looking at this AI model, they noticed that one of the things that it is capable of detecting is a hot dog. So they just put a flag for, did hot dog show up as one of the items? But there's like hundreds of other items that it will, you know, detect. Or maybe not hundreds, I don't know. But apparently they were like, oh, hot dog done. That's it. It's there's already a hot dog AI model. Oh, I freaking love it.
Yeah. So the winners, those four winners, they'll probably within the next couple of weeks, we'll send out the prizes. I have to finish building the trophies.
All right.
I have all the PCBs and everything. I just have to get time to actually build them. But yeah, I built some custom PCBs in like a 3D printed base. And like the PCBs light up and all that stuff. A little cool, I think.
Nice.
So if you go to form.macfab.com, you can see the trophy.
Ooh. It's actually a really cool trophy.
Yeah.
So congratulations to all four winners.
Yep.
Yet another successful contest.
Yeah. So we should be running another contest soon. We don't really know exactly. Oh, I remember what it is now. So it's going to be an IoT wearable contest. Well, I think we'll have a rule. You can't
resubmit. No, you can't resubmit. No, you got to be new.
No. there was a funny name for it. And actually, funny, Aaron came up with it. I don't remember it anymore, though. I'll have to go look that up.
Yeah, because we're trying to do contests more regularly now.
Yeah, I wanted to try to do... What I'd like to do is 4 a year. But if we can get 2 done this year... Because this one's going to last longer. Mm-hmm. But if I can get 2 done this year, I'll be pretty happy.
You know what would be actually... Okay, get this. In relation to what I said earlier. This would be funny. A contest where you have to finish a project that you've had lying around. And you just enter that in. And you get extra points if the project is older. And you finish it. That would be funny. Like the cat feeder on Reminder. If you just finished it, you would get some extra points for that. I love it.
Trying to see if I wrote down what that contest was called. This is going to kill me.
I remember talking about this, but I don't remember a specific name for it.
Yeah, because I don't think I told you about it yet. Yeah, I don't remember it anymore. It had some like cool name, and I'm like blinking on it now.
Yeah. Well, we'll be announcing it, I don't know, sometime soon.
Yeah, within a month or so.
Yep.
Because we're trying to partner up with some other companies and stuff with it too. So that's taking a little longer. But yes, another contest. It's going to be like wearable IoT. Man, they had such a cool name. Wow, this is making for a great podcast, isn't it? You want to go into our next topic?
Sure, let's go ahead and do it. So, it's 2024. What's up with our manufacturing files? And wasn't necessarily trying to be super clickbaity with this, but I actually kind of had a little bit of an argument in our engineering department the other day about manufacturing files for PCB and PCA work. And it really brought up a question of the files that we create for PCAs and PCBs, specifically fab drawings and assembly drawings. We kind of went around the engineering department and started asking the question, why do we even do it? Like, what's the purpose of actually producing these files? And especially with it being 2024, which I hate it when people say it's year X, Y, blah, blah, blah. But I figured it would be fun to say that. The real question is, like, what is the purpose of creating assembly and fabrication drawings? And is there a better way we could be doing this? Doesn't it seem, at least in from my opinion, it seems that our manufacturing of PCBs is pretty damn standardized. You can go to any contract manufacturer and say the same thing to them, and it typically means the same thing to every single person. Why is it that these assembly and fabrication rules or drawings or information, why is that not baked into our EDA tools? I do know that, you know, fabrication and assembly drawings are kind of one of the areas where you get to explain to your CM things that are unique about your design. And I do understand that there's plenty of there's usefulness in that. And I understand that's a place that is outside of the digital world where you can give instructions that are unique to whatever your design is. But in my experience, that's actually semi-rare that you need to tell your CM something that is so unique that you need a specific drawing for it. Now, at the same time, I can understand that a fabrication or an assembly drawing is a controlled document that you can have reviewed and approved and properly released within your company. And so that does give weight to why we would create something like that. But I have not experienced an EDA tool yet that kind of has a single button click that just craps out everything you need for...
Yeah, it generates your PCB specifications, because that's what you're talking about with this assembly doc is, like, what kind of surface finish? What's the stack up? What is sometimes they will put in like the minimal trace width and that kind of stuff in there.
Well, but yeah, but even above and beyond that, you have, you know, does this need a particular IPC class of manufacturer?
That too, yeah.
You know, things of that sort. But all of these notes are not like unique to your company. These are very standard things that go on drawings. So we were talking about this just the other week. I could totally see an EDA tool having a wizard that steps you through and it says, does your board need blind buried vias? And you click yes or no. Does your board need IPC class 2? And you click yes or no. And then it goes and it spits out an assembly drawing for you and
a
done.
PDF, yeah.
Yeah, a PDF that
yeah,
looks
it's
nice
funny because
does it all.
Is at MacroFab, that's kind of what the MacroFab platform does, is give you that wizard.
You know, and that was something I was going to get to. The MacroFab platform is your assembly drawing, effectively.
Effectively, yes. Yeah. Like when you upload your Gerbers or your design file, like if it's KiCad or Altium or whatever, and then it will give you all the specifications and you can click, I want IPC class 3. Or I need that. I need ENIG finish. I need all this stuff. And then, because what happens on the back end is we standardize all that information and actually produce a assembly drawn. Well, it's not really assembly drawn, an assembly document
right.
that goes to the fabs that's standardized.
Right.
So we take all this information and standardize it into one format. And that's what these drawings are supposed to do. My favorite thing, though, is most CMs I found do not read these assembly documents.
Right.
At all.
Right.
Because this is why. Because we'll get documentation from customers and they're like, you know what? And we go and start piecing through that documentation and we will almost always find conflicting information.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll send us a PDF or like an email or a PDF that will say, these are my specifications. And then we'll find like a crusty 5 Xerox scanned Gerber file that has the specifications from like a long time ago that just like that's contained in their frame,
mm-hmm.
like their drawing frame, and it will have completely conflicting specifications for this PCB.
Right.
Like it'll have different stack up or have like it's calling out leaded hassle where yep. like and then the PDF says that they sent us says they want ENIG finish. Like almost I want to say at least half of the packages that we look at have conflicting information like that. And when we bring it up to customers, most of the time the customer will be like, oh, just use the PDF. Ignore the old drawing. The old drawing is there because it's an artifact that someone set up ages ago and we don't use it anymore. It's just part of our manufacturing. Which is, by the way, insanity to think about that your manufacturing package has conflicting information in it.
It should not.
It should be what you were talking about earlier, a controlled document
yeah.
that is approved and is correct. That's why you do it. And so you can say, this is what we want to build and has everything in it, all the information required to build it.
Well, both those drawings, fabrication for PCB and assembly for PCA, both of those drawings are the engineer's way of telling their production, or no, sorry, not production, procurement team, this is what I want to buy. Such that the person who goes out and buys the board doesn't have to know all the intricacies of it. They have a drawing that literally says, get it with these specifications. And that would be amazing and fantastic if we lived in a world where people cared about making sure that information was right on those drawings. But as Parker was saying, maybe 50% of them are wrong. And so having worked at multiple CMs, I've experienced that too, where I get a drawing and the very first thing in my mind isn't, oh, I'm going to look at this drawing and follow that. It's, I have to check this drawing for this person who gave it to me because I can't trust that they did it correctly because the initial or the original intent of an assembly drawing or a fabrication drawing has lost its meaning. They don't mean the same thing that they used to. Some people think that they are gospel truth and they will completely go thermonuclear if you fail to do something on that drawing. And then, like Parker said, some people are like, oh, no, just ignore it. I'm sorry that I even sent it to you, right?
Yeah, and because there is that small percentage when you bring this up that there's conflicts in their assembly drawing or in their manufacturing files. So some of them say ignore the old stuff.
Yeah.
Another majority says, oh, thank you for bringing that up. We didn't know there was a problem. And they go and fix it on their end.
Right.
Great. But then there's that. Actually, the thing is, out of like a year's worth, so like thousands of these, I think we only get one that actually just gets pissed off.
Yeah.
Like they basically just rip you and say, what do you mean there's conflicts?
Right, right.
Like something that we did wrong. Like we might get one of those, which is very
rare.
You're
the CM. You should know how to do this.
No, exactly.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But then we also get a small subset that is like, we didn't know there's a problem. Our CM just took care of it.
Right. Which so is that's a big problem too.
Yeah. So it's like, what did the CM do then? Because we, as the new CM, we have no idea what they did.
Right. Right.
Like, did they use the old one or did they use a new one?
The world may never know.
You know. When usually that pops up, we're like, can you, like, send a picture of your board so we can figure out what the old CM did?
Right. Which, okay. That's the mark of a good CM, if you ask me, where they're like, okay, there's a conflict. We're going to let you know. We're not just going to plow forward and make decisions. And then if there is, you know, further things that need to happen, they work with you. Like, okay, send us a picture. We'll fix your documentation for you in terms of we'll tell you what you need to go change on your document. You know, it's not your job to change their document for them. But
we've done that before, though. That's okay.
I mean, trust me. I have too. Trust me. But I hadn't even thought about it until earlier today where I was like, wait, why are our EDA tools not producing this thing that people think is a 100% must have? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I wonder if even like ODB++ or the IPC, what's the IPC equivalent?
Oh, I don't even remember. It's a number, right?
IPC 2581.
Yeah.
I wonder if those have all that information in
it. Well, okay, so ODB will...
Or can.
ODB has effectively your Gerbers, it has your netlist, it has your bill of materials, and it has your stack up. So it has some of the items that are in there, but I don't think it has all of them. And
can you tell... Yeah, can you tell your CM that in that package that the material is like Roger... Like, what's Roger's... Like 4000 series. Is there a Roger? I hope there's a Roger 4000 series.
Aluminum board, say that.
There is a Rogers 4000 series.
Okay, well, you got lucky.
I got.
Okay.
Material for the substrate.
Okay, so here's the funny thing. Okay, so if you say assembly drawing, what goes through my head is it is a set of instructions that tells somebody how you want your thing to be assembled, right? The funny thing is, having worked at a CM, I will get assembly drawings, and then I will get extra drawings that are like, here's how you assemble this thing. It's like, well, wait, shouldn't these be one thing? Shouldn't these just be the assembly? Like, take for instance, you have through-hole parts that need to be soldered at a certain height off the board. So you have to have a little jig or a little fixture or tool or something that sets the height of the parts off the board. In my opinion, the assembly drawing is actually a really great place to put that because that's how you assemble the board kind of thing. But I've had so many situations or experiences where I'll get an assembly drawing and then I'll get this other Word document or this PDF that's like, here's how to assemble these LEDs. And so once again, it just goes back to like, why do we have these assembly drawings if we're not using them for what they're supposed to be used for? And I'll call out one other thing that I recently ran into that sort of grinds my gears, but on an assembly drawing, you typically show a top and bottom view of your PCBs, or at least that's the traditional way of doing it, right? And you give reference designator indicators on that image, shall you say. Okay, PCBs are at the point now where, I mean, they've been this way for a long time, but most PCBs are so dense that it makes no sense to actually put all the reference designators on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, because if you print it out, you couldn't make the font small enough to actually put everything on there. There's just no way for it to actually be readable. And so I can understand, you know, if we're talking about a through-hole assembly from the 80s or whatnot, where you have giant resistors and everything's spread out, and it's like, oh, this is where R1 goes and this is where C10 goes. Like, that's a great situation where you can pull up the assembly drawing and say, yes, I see where these reference designators are. But on these, they're trying to think of like a reference designator on a motherboard for a PC. Like, what the assembly drawing isn't going to tell you anything about that. But yet we are such sticklers for having to do it a very particular way. Because what? Because tradition? Because that's how it's always been done? Because that's what the CM expects? Like, what is the purpose of us actually doing it? Because this is burning engineers' time. For what purpose? I know I probably sound like I'm going around in circles here, but this is really starting to bother me now that we don't have a better solution for this. And this is not a plug for MacroFab, but we don't have a better solution other than what MacroFab has put together. Because yeah. I think you guys have it right. Because you do show reference designators. You do show like R1 goes here and C10 goes there. And then all of, basically, like I said, you guys have created the wizard for stepping through your assembly drawing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the idea, was to standardize. It was the standardized stuff so you could assemble it easier, so less tooling and right. less kind of having to do the engineering work on the back end to actually make the product or make the PCB correctly. So you didn't have to like parse a ancient Gerber. But go back to what you're saying about tradition. What happens is it goes back to it's always been done that way.
Or that's the quote proper way.
Sure, if you want to say proper way.
That's why I said quote.
we had a podcast a long time ago, and it was with Chris Gamble, and he had a quote that he said, which was, it's tradition's peer pressure from the dead.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's actually the name of the podcast episode, too.
That sounds right. That sounds like something we would do.
Yeah. And apparently it's a quote from something else, because just Googling that has like a bunch of other results that's not our podcast, yeah. Which is a shame. Chris, you stole it from somewhere. But I think that's kind of what it is. Hopefully in this point, it's tradition's peer pressure from the retired people from our industry. Maybe they're not dead yet.
But okay. I don't want to make it sound like assembly drawings have never had
a problem.
I think they were absolutely critical. It's just, are they critical today?
I would say they're in the traditional sense, no. If you do have weird specifications, that's the whole thing. It's like, I don't know what OD++ can handle in its specification side.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should. I probably should go look in what it can handle there. And maybe poke our product team to be like, hey, you should like try to pull that stuff in automatically so our users don't have to like click those buttons. But yeah, I don't know if it handles it natively or not. Or like, how would you even send that information to that package generator?
And how would you even know that they got it all correctly? You know, unless they like parsed it and gave it back to you.
Yeah.
And so the argument I was saying earlier about, you know, an assembly drawing is a controlled document. I mean, technically you can make anything a controlled document, right? So you could put all your specifications in a Word doc and make that a controlled document, and that would be sufficient, you know, assuming it contains all the information you need. I'm just, what's so magical about an assembly drawing other than it looks like all the ones that came before it, right? So it looks right. It looks engineering.
That's what it is. But it goes back to a control document.
Yeah,
it is something that you can stamp and say, this is what we want to get built.
Right. Everyone agrees that what's written on here is what we're getting.
Yeah. The problem is half the time people just like gloss over it and just stamp it.
Right. Right. Or half the time, like, okay, say it's the 30th time you've built this board or whatever, and you have a new purchasing team or blah, blah, blah. And they don't even know that the assembly drawing is part of the design package. They just kick it off to the CM like they've done, you know, 100 times in the past.
Yeah. I would say the biggest thing is on the kicking it off is just the design document or the assembly document is you got to make sure it's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's getting me is, or like they make this like crappy PDF slash like Word doc
mm-hmm.
that goes along with it. It's like, why don't you just fix the old one?
Right.
So I don't know what it is. I think it's just peer pressure from the dead man.
You know, one of the things we've implemented at work that I actually really appreciate, and it seems way over the top, but every time now we go out to order a board, we call a meeting with the responsible engineer. That's whoever designed the board. They get a few people in the room, and they pull up the assembly drawing, and they read it, and they say, "Is this what we want to buy?" And everyone in the room has to say, "Yes, all of the notes on here is what we want to buy." Even if it's a rebuy of the thing, we still walk through it, and everyone goes, "That's it. Go and buy it." And I like that. It seems like a ton of extra work, but you know, like in that sense, we're treating the assembly document like it's the most important part of that. And I think that's really valuable. But I could also see people thinking like that's just a massive waste of time, right?
I don't know. If you're the kind of person that thinks it's very important, you should be spending that much time on it, though.
Agreed. And, I've worked with CMs that think that they're most important thing ever. And I've worked with CMs that are like, yeah, sure, just give us the information in an email and that's good enough, right? And I'm not saying one is necessarily better than the other. It certainly just depends on what you're trying to get manufactured. I do wish that there was more emphasis, like I said, from EDA tools on producing that information, because it is still, those drawings are still generally considered the standard.
Yeah, and what you talk about is the reason why this is so weird is people would just type them out in text in a certain, like in a specific layer in their EDA tool.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like a document layer. And then it just gets exported out as a Gerber, which the fact that you can't even like search it in a text editor.
Yeah. Right.
It's a visual document that displays text.
Yeah. 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 Vectorized text.
It kills me.
Yeah. Right. Well, okay. So that actually goes back to double E's using EDA tools as drawing software.
Yes. No, that's 100% at that point. Yeah. You know, I just came up with an idea. I wonder if I shouldn't say this on the podcast.
Oh, what's up?
Do is if you find an assembly drawing, export it as like export it and like do OCR on it and get the text. And then see if you can. I'm writing this down. I'm gonna try this out.
So I'm curious from all of our listeners, or I guess all of our breakers, what are your thoughts on these drawings? Do you have to produce them for your day job? And if you do, are you pro them? Or do you think that there's another solution that we should be doing? I really would love to hear people's thoughts and see if there's like a trend and see if people like absolutely love them and want to spend more time doing them or just absolutely hate them and want a more automated solution. So forum.macrofab.com. Go to our community and let us know your thoughts on assembly and fabrication drawings. And if you have a better solution, if you have some wacko thing that's like, this is the way that I think we should do it, let us know.
So thank you for listening to Circuit Break from Macrofab. We're your hosts, Parker Dillman.
And Stephen Craig.
Later, everyone.
Take it easy.
Thank you, yes, you breaker, for downloading our podcast. Tell your friends and coworkers about Circuit Break, the podcast from Macrofab. If you have a cool idea, project, or topic you want us to discuss, let Stephen and I and the community know. Our community, where you can find personal projects, discussions about the podcast, and engineering topics, and news, is located at forum.macrofab.com. Give us a review, too. We need those reviews.